Welcome to the Engage Podcast from Blackbaud, the podcast for people dedicated to purpose-driven work. From nonprofit fundraising and finance to grant-making, education, and corporate social responsibility, we're talking with sector experts and thought leaders about the best practices and latest trends that will help you grow your impact.
Hello, everyone. Today, I am joined by Carrie Alice Robinson, President and CEO of Catholic Charities USA and co-chair of the Generosity Commission's Faith and Giving Task Force, and John Tyler, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary for the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation and co-chair of the Generosity Commission's Policy Task Force. Both played key roles in the Commission's work. And today, we will be talking about everyday actions, extraordinary potential, the power of giving and volunteering. So to our audience, thank you for joining us. I am Sally Ehrenfried, and I lead government relations for Blackbaud. And before we get started with the questions, I'm going to provide a little bit of background on the Generosity Commission. People across the U.S. are giving their time and money to things that matter most to them. Everyday givers and volunteers participate because they want to make their communities better. Everyday generosity has extraordinary power to meet local needs, build community, and strengthen our social fabric. Generosity is a part of who we are, but the shape it takes continues to change as fewer people are giving to and volunteering with nonprofit organizations. We have also seen a steady decline in the share of households giving to nonprofits, dropping from 66.2% in 2000 to 49.6% in 2018. And a parallel decline in the rate of volunteering, going from 27% of Americans in 2002 to 23% in 2021. In the face of these changes, the Generosity Commission was convened in 2021 to better understand giving and volunteering today and protect and promote the future of generosity. It listened to and learned from scholars, practitioners, and everyday donors. Their work has led to research insights and recommendations for policymakers, business leaders, foundation officers, and nonprofit innovators. In the report, released in September, it contains 9 recommendations that range from increasing the availability of data on giving and volunteering to taking youth seriously as givers and volunteers, to reinforcing the role of the business community as conveners of employees, to increasing the availability of the charitable tax deduction. You can learn more about the commission and its report at thegenerositycommission.org. Carrie, I'm going to have you get us started by introducing yourself and telling us what drew you to the commission and motivated you to participate in its work.
Sally and John, so good to be with you, especially to have a conversation about generosity. My background is in philanthropy and fundraising. And that work has been largely on behalf of the Catholic religious and humanitarian sector. When I learned of the Generosity Commission and its purpose and was given the opportunity to co-chair the Faith in Giving Task Force in service to the Generosity Commission with my good friend David King of the Lake Institute, I literally leapt at the opportunity. I'm just fundamentally convinced that generosity is humankind's birthright, and that we are all called to be generous and to serve as catalysts to inspire generosity in others. I believe it leads to an abundant and meaningful life for individuals, for families, and for communities. And I was really eager to engage with thought leaders across the country on this very topic.
Super. Thanks, Carrie. And John, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Sally. And Sally, thank you to you for coordinating this podcast and hosting us and giving Carrie and I a chance to interact more with each other and with you. And thanks to Blackbaud for making it possible. So I'm John Tyler, and as you said, I'm General Counsel, Secretary, Chief Ethics Officer for the Ewing Kauffman Foundation, a foundation in Kansas City, Missouri, with a particular focus on equitable economic mobility. And what attracted me to the Generosity Commission's work really has to do a great deal with, you know, my deep belief in the value of the charitable sector. And that runs across several different types of principles, behaviors, activities. But ultimately, because of the opportunity that the sector gives for people to engage with each other, to engage with community, you know, to experiment, to test ideas, to work together, and to contribute in our own ways to advancing the value of our society and the value of democracy. You know, I learned from a young age with the example of my mother and father and their engagement and their contributions of time and money continuing through to this day. And so, and being at a private foundation, which is admittedly a unique vantage point and a unique opportunity, you know, I've been able to engage in different ways with the sector as a whole. And the commission's work to engage at ground level with everyday givers just seemed like an extraordinary opportunity, and especially given the need, given the trends of declining. So I was very excited about the opportunity to try to contribute and to work with Art Taylor, who co-chaired the policy task force, and especially the members of the task force and the commission itself. It was just an extraordinary group of people deeply committed to the work.
Great. Thank you, John and Kerry. So let's dive right into the commission's findings, report, and its recommendations. So in research that it funded, the Generosity Commission, the Do Good Institute at the University of Maryland found that volunteering and giving appear to increase the likelihood that adults vote in national elections. And we all know, obviously, this year is a presidential election year. And what they found is that controlling for all factors, volunteering increases turnout probability by 12%, and giving increases it by 10.1%. So, John, this question for you, what concerns you the most about the decline in the number of people participating in giving and volunteering?
Well, I think that there has been an instinctive understanding and to some degrees documented understanding about the interrelationship across different types of behaviors and activities. The Generosity Commission commissioned research to do deeper dives into those connections, and you know, the work of the Do Good Institute, the Lilly School, and others validated the prior research and what instinct shows. And that is the connections between, and not necessarily causal, but if people donate money, they usually give time. If they're donating money and giving time, they're usually connected through a religious or spiritual and formal religious spiritual experience and community. And they're voting. They're engaged in the electoral process and the governmental, civic governmental processes. I'm not sure, you know, chicken and an egg, which comes first, but they're interrelated. And if there are declines in one, and the data shows there are declines in multiples of those, there are going to be declines across the board in others as well. And that is particularly disconcerting to me because our society, our community, our relationships are strengthened when those things are all working well together. And by working well together, I don't necessarily mean that everybody agrees with everybody all the time. They're actually working well together, especially when there is disagreement, but disagreement respectfully, you know, pursued. One of the most significant problems that the research showed, one of the most, for me, most significant problems the research showed, is that a substantial amount of the decline in the numbers of donors and the numbers of volunteers has occurred in low moderate income populations. And if low moderate income populations are not donating money or contributing their time, that's usually they're giving, they're engaging much more deeply in local community organizations that depend, the data shows, depend more heavily on that type of engagement. And that's grassroots. That is the fundamental essence of civil society, charitable sector, community engagement, et cetera. If there is that disconnect, what effect does that have on the core foundations and the roots of the sector and the roots of that cross engagement? And that's, you know, particularly concerning, I think. I also think that there were some of the data talked about engaging youth and how youth were engaging or in some cases disengaging from this type of activity. And you know, one of the Generosity Commission's reports, part of what the report discusses and part of what the recommendations discuss, is more intentionally encouraging more intentional engagement with youth, because youth, they bring ideas, they bring perspectives, they bring challenges to the status quo, all of which are good things. They also bring energy and talent, and sometimes even money. Very often not big money, but you know, looking at my Christian background, Catholic background, the widow's mite is important. Those dollars from youth, the dollars from low, moderate income families are absolutely essential. The dollars matter as dollars, but the dollars matter, the time matters as part of the connectedness between the person and others.
Great. Thank you, John. And thank you for bringing up the question of young people, because we're going to get into that a little bit more deeply in a couple questions. And so, Carrie, I want to turn to you. The commission identified the need to learn more about the intersection of faith and giving across communities, contexts, and traditions. Studies show that religious Americans are more likely to give and volunteer to both religious and secular causes. Those who attend religious service weekly are 50% more likely to give. But in 2020, only 47% of Americans said they belonged to a religious institution versus 70% in 1999. And then in 2002, only 67% said they attended religious service versus 81% in 2002. Carrie, what do these studies tell us about why people give and the impact of religiosity? Are these numbers a cause for concern? And what more do we need to know?
These numbers are absolutely a cause for concern. And it was abundantly clear the correlation between religious affiliation and generosity. All of the world's major religious traditions enjoin people of faith to be other-centered on God and other-centered on one another. And we are instructed to be lavishly generous as a consequence of our own blessings, and to be especially generous to show the most care for those who are especially vulnerable. So our Faith and Giving Task Force relied on data and studies that demonstrate very clearly the connection of religious participation and giving and volunteering. This inspired amazing conversations among the task force. To be religious is to be part of a community of faith. And this experience for many begins at an early age as part of a family. There are religious texts that speak to generosity. There are religious practices during worship and outside of worship that speak to generosity. It becomes a habit and an expectation, often learned at a very early age. And those of us who have taken this experience seriously end up concluding what every donor or volunteer invariably says: I received much more than I gave. There is just something simply soulful about this disposition. Now, of course, people who do not belong to any religious tradition or do not identify as religious can be exceedingly generous with their time and money. However, our task force wanted to make sure this crucial part of the picture, these data, this striking correlation, and these worrisome trends were made manifest as part of the conversation and what to do next.
Great, thank you. And now turning us back to the conversation on youth, the commission's research, also from the Do Good Institute, found that age is the strongest predictor of giving. The giving rate increases steadily over the life cycle, and the difference in giving rates between the youngest age group, those 16 to 24, and the oldest age group, those 75 and over, is 34.6%, all else being equal. Blackbaud's Institute report on Gen Z at the Table has also found that 84% of Gen Zers support nonprofit organizations, charities, or causes in some way, and that one-third of Gen Z donors plan to increase their giving in the coming year, even though they're in their early stages as financial donors. Carrie, again, this question for you. One of the recommendations is taking youth donors and volunteers seriously. Can you share your thoughts on the importance of getting youth involved in giving and volunteering?
Yes, I really appreciate it. Like John, I really appreciate it that the commission focused on youth and highlighted this as a crucial piece of the mosaic. I would never be on this podcast with you, let alone serving as co-chair of the Faith and Giving Task Force, had it not been for the introduction of both faith and giving at a very early age. I'm part of a family that now has an 80-year history of serving the Catholic Church locally and globally through the instrument of a private family foundation. So what this means is 80 years ago, my great-grandparents, John and Helena Raskob, set up a foundation with two intentions. They wanted all of the money to be used exclusively to support the church's religious, educational, health, and humanitarian ministries and work all over the globe. And they wanted their children and descendants to be stewards of the foundation's resources as volunteers. Five generations of our family have been engaged in this work, and we are formally invited into this service as teenagers. That is a tremendously formative time in one's life. Every Catholic institution or ministry that I have been engaged with at the board level engages in this very subject. How do we involve young adults in our work as donors? Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. is a model in this regard. They have created an entire robust community of young adult Catholics in a giving society, which leads to greater engagement, greater volunteering, greater donations to support the life-giving work of service to people in need. And it builds community. I am alarmed, as we all should be, by the Surgeon General's declaration of an epidemic of isolation and loneliness in the U.S. This has a deleterious effect on mental health. So creating ways to build community around generosity, around volunteering, is a critical key to addressing multiple societal concerns. Quite simply, it is good for everyone.
Great. Thank you. And so we've touched on the impact of religion as conveners of people, and including young people, with Carrie's response to our last question. And so I'm going to take on, you know, the host prerogative and dive a little bit into the role of business. You know, the commission hosted focus groups of everyday givers and volunteers across the U.S., and one participant in particular, someone from Arizona who was between the ages of 26 and 30, was quoted as saying, "My company might not have money to give, but can they give time and maybe focus on people spending their time in ways that impact their own communities?" And so as we turn to the role of business as conveners of people, especially those early in their careers, the commission calls on businesses in their report to encourage volunteerism and giving. And I want us to touch on really the importance of this role and responsibility of business leaders and what the benefit to businesses is when they support everyday generosity. You know, as we've discussed, you know, previously in other forums where the commission has been, I'll add that Mike Giannone, Blackbaud's CEO, was co-chair of the commission primarily because he was so passionate about the role of business in this work. And so it's simply good business to do more good, right? So partnerships with nonprofits and other social impact initiatives are one of the unique ways that businesses can drive positive change across their organizational needs. It deepens ties with communities, it improves culture and motivation, and it boosts a company's brand. In moments of sustained uncertainty like we've been experiencing late, corporate giving, volunteerism, and generosity is one of those tried and true ways to improve an organization and to get people involved. And as Mike is so often stated, business leaders have responsibilities beyond the bottom line, right? We all have a duty to our employees, our customers, and the communities that we serve. And the commission's insights are just a very crucial tool for business leaders to better understand how they can deliver new, meaningful, and even innovative opportunities for employees to engage and support their communities, and especially empowering employees to advance causes that they care about, to promote volunteerism and encouraging giving back through corporate matches. And the list could go on and on. And for Blackbaud, we're leaning into remote first work. And so generosity can create a shared experience and deep bonds that were formerly shaped by an everyday office culture. I was sharing with Carrie and John today that I happen to be in Blackbaud's headquarters today, but that has become a rare occurrence for me. But being part of a community within a company that is passionate about giving back and serving and being generous is an opportunity for me to engage with my own colleagues. And I think that the moment that we're in right now provides a really unique opportunity for businesses and nonprofits to join forces to a much greater degree, you know, filling a void in leadership that many communities are calling for. Communities win when their organizations move forward with shared values and commitments, and this is embodied so well by cross-sector partnerships. And businesses are strengthened when civil society's halo extends to them and their brands. And then organizations, charitable organizations of all sizes, are able to dedicate resources to encourage everyday giving and volunteering. And then they can empower local groups to reach more people at the grassroots level. So there, that's my business spiel. And many folks have heard me say how fortunate I believe I am to work for a company such as Blackbaud that does really embody these traditions and support all of us as we move along on our own giving and volunteering journeys. So John is going to add to this answer.
Yeah, just a little bit. And Sally, I very much appreciate your advocacy for the business sector engagement in the charitable sector, because they are intertwined in so many ways, as you very eloquently said. But one of the things, and Mike has talked about this a few times, one of the things that businesses very often do, they become a model of behavior for young people entering the workforce. And by the leaders of the business, by the managers of the business, by colleagues within business, giving of time, giving of resources, the business giving of time and resources helps set the example and hopefully reinforces an example that's already been set for young workers getting into the market and into the economy. Reinforces it. If they haven't experienced it, the young people haven't experienced it, it becomes a way of modeling that behavior and the benefits of it for the business, for the community, and for the person, and probably not in that order. The benefits for the community, for the person, for the business is probably the order I would put it in.
Great. Thank you, John. And staying with you for this next part of our conversation, the last two recommendations that are included in the commission's report focus on policymakers. Mm-hmm. And you were the chair of the commission's policy task force. So where do you see this report landing in light of the tax discussions that are in store for us for 2025? And for our listeners, just a quick note that the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which was passed in 2017 and enacted in 2018, most of the tax provisions, if not all of them, expire in 2025. So we're going to have a big conversation, and I mean a big conversation around tax policy in 2025, regardless of the outcome of November's elections. So John, over to you.
So thank you, Sally. And several of the provisions of the Tax Cut Jobs Act of 2017 involved the charitable sector. And so that will be part of the discussion, whether those continue, expand, go away. And then that becomes the opportunity for other topics that will affect the sector to be part of the policy discussion as well. The policy task force and then the commission moving on the recommendation felt very strongly that the universal charitable deduction was an important policy lever that Congress and the president, whoever that is at the time, will have to affect the number of givers of money. And that was the commission's scope, looking at expanding, reversing the trends in the decline of the numbers. So policy levers to expand the numbers, the universal charitable deduction, you know, was very much at the top of that list. And the reason for that is because, and I hinted at this before, but we'll be more overt about it now. Everybody's giving to nonprofits. Everybody's giving into the charitable sector matters. So there's an economic incentive, a tax economic incentive to give, but only if you itemize. And without going too deep into tax policy, you know, the number of people who itemize is fewer in light of the Tax Cut Jobs Act. And the number of people who take the standard deduction is greater, which is tax policy. I don't want to get into that. But the signaling effect is, and the conversations unfortunately kind of become, if you itemize, your charitable contributions matter. If you don't itemize, your charitable contributions don't matter as a signaling policy effect. We have an opportunity with the universal charitable deduction to say every taxpayer's giving matters. And it runs the gamut from that you give, how much you give, when you give, but especially who you give to. So there are several private conversations, private decisions that are involved in the giving. And a universal charitable deduction says, as a signaling effect, all of those matter. Each person's decisions or each couple's decision, each family's decisions matter. That you give, how much you give, when you give, and who you give to within the 501c3 context. So the universal charitable deduction is able to pull those things together and reinforce the importance for our society of that engagement. At a higher level, as Congress and policymakers and society, we move into 2025 and looking at tax policy and these other things. The commission's report, the recommendations, the landscape analysis that Ben Soskus did, and Ben pulling, you know, the report together with support from many, is an important document to serve as an educational filter, to inform judgment, to inform discussion, and perhaps to inform other policy discussions that might not as directly affect the sector. But when the sector is such an important part of the economy, when it's such an important part of the labor market, over and above being an important part of community and cementing relationships in community, understanding and at least asking the question, does this policy have a positive or negative or neutral effect on the charitable sector? And the report itself, you know, can help serve that greater purpose as well, if you will.
Great. Thank you, John. And, you know, as we begin to close out our conversation, one of the commission's recommendations is to encourage public figures and leaders in a broad range of fields to speak openly about how they give and volunteer and how they've benefited from others giving and volunteering. So I'm going to turn the table on my guests and ask each of them to take this opportunity to share their giving and volunteering experiences. And Carrie, let's start with you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful recommendation. And I think most people who are generous are humble about it. And so they don't actually want to draw attention to their generosity, but we are inspired by each other's stories. So I think it's really an insightful and good recommendation. I've been especially fortunate in that I cannot remember a time in my life when generosity, volunteering, and service wasn't a concrete, expected, and entirely beneficial aspect of my life. You see the world differently when you are other-centered, when you encounter and accompany people different than you. I can't imagine being a person of faith, in my case, Catholic, and not heed the call of the gospel to feed those who are hungry, to shelter those who need shelter, to welcome the stranger, to console those who mourn. I've taken this really seriously all of my life, and I'm absolutely convinced that meaning is found in this basic disposition of generosity. And it is a kind of fulfillment of my sense of vocation to be asked to serve as president and CEO of Catholic Charities USA. Our work at the national office is to equip the local agencies with the resources and training they need to excel at their mission of serving people in need. We are not the frontline workers at the national office. However, it was extremely important to me, almost from day one on the job, that we dedicate at least one day for the entire staff to volunteer at three local agencies together as a staff. My husband and I engage our children in giving and decisions around generosity, and now our children are both young members of the Raskob Foundation. As an extended family, we have family service days where we give our collective time and labor to grantees, and generosity begets generosity. Finally, I want to note that we are having this conversation after two massive and devastating hurricanes, Helene and Milton. Catholic Charities USA is the official disaster response agency of the Catholic Church in the U.S. The generosity in this moment is extraordinary. And this kind of generosity also helps us transcend that which divides us. I just fundamentally believe that people are fundamentally good and they want to help. They want to be part of something larger than themselves that benefits others. So conversations like this with you, Sally and John, allow us to imagine ways we can all make it easier for people to cultivate habits and opportunities of generosity in their own lives.
Thank you, Carrie and John. Your story.
You want to pick up on Carrie's reference to Helene and Milton and the destruction. You know, there's an old story told of Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers when he would say watching the news and kids would be watching the news in the face of devastation like this, and Mr. Rogers would say, "Look for the helpers. You will see the helpers in every single news story. They may not get mentioned in the news, but you see them there in the pictures. You hear about their effects. Look for the helpers." Those helpers are community. And it is a combination of individual people, individual hearts, individual minds and muscle, nonprofit organizations, charities, for-profit organizations, and government agencies and workers. You know, together, looking at it in the first instance, helping people get through what it is they're dealing with. But getting through is the start to rebuilding, reclaiming that which is their lives. And that's by no means easy, but because of community, because of other orientations, as Carrie talked about, we're able to do that. The charitable sector, you know, generosity, a giving mindset or spirit, just fundamental kindness in an orientation is part of all of that. My wife and I, in raising our six children, have tried to teach them kindness as part of who they are and what they have benefited from. And you know, I'm not a big fan of the phrase giving back. It's more giving in, it's giving of, as opposed to giving back. And that's not conversation for another day. But a lot of my, you know, generosity and time and money, I suppose, has started with family. It has started with our kids, their activities, our church, our neighborhood, you know, their engagements, their things. But it's never only been about that. It's also recognizing that we are part of a larger community. So being a part of organizations like Reconciliation Services that helps people in a low income part of Kansas City, and helping not just with money but also with time and ideas and creativity, and helping them evaluate some innovative thinking and approaches, bringing some ideas but bringing some response and some critical thinking not just to reconciliation services, but to others as well. And sometimes I will say it's just money. Sometimes it's just time, but time is never divorced from talent. Those go together. And that's how the example I got from my parents, the law firm that I picked, and was fortunate to have gotten an offer from when I got out of law school. Part of the reason I picked the firm was asking quite, how do you support lawyers' engagement in the community? And that engagement, that support was particularly strong. I wouldn't be at the Kauffman Foundation as its general counsel. I was a litigator. I wasn't a nonprofit lawyer or a foundation lawyer. I was doing litigation. But because the law firm supported my engagement in the community, and I had great mentors among the partners in the firm who supported and taught me how to engage. That led to, so far a 25-year career at Kauffman, where I'm able to combine the professional side of giving and go beyond that, but then also still emphasize a personal side of giving too.
Thank you both. So appreciate your answers. And then our very last couple questions that I will ask together. Why does the commission's work matter? And would you like to issue a call to action for our listeners? Carrie, let's start with you.
I hope the Generosity Commission and its seminal report inspires meaningful conversations like this one, frankly, about the importance of generosity for our individual and our communal health. A call to action might be an invitation to everyone listening to set aside some time to ask the simple question, where does generosity show up in my life today? Where as a family are we generous? How could we be more generous and be conscious of it? And how can we inspire and encourage others to know the liberating blessing of being generous?
Thank you, Carrie and John.
I think that the commission's work has been extraordinary. And I think part of the extraordinary nature of it is that the commission understood that we as a society have an issue. That's the declining engagement. We as a society have problems. We as a society have solutions. The charitable sector is a big part of the solutions. Engaging with the sector becomes a big part of the solutions as well. Part of what the commission has did from the beginning, it didn't, and the report doesn't come out and say, we have the solutions. Here is the playbook. Follow it and all will be well. The problems, the trends are too big for that. And so there was a wonderful humility and I think reality in the commission's work. And a big part of what the commission's, the report and the recommendations recognize is that what we need is, and Carrie mentioned this, what we need is greater awareness, greater attention, greater intentionality about engaging. One of the reports the commission referenced asked people, have you benefited from a charity, from the work of a charity? Charity has helped you in some way. And so few people responded yes to that, that it fundamentally defied reality. And the reality was, and you could start asking questions about, have you been to a museum? Did you go to school? Did the school have a PTA? And, did you go to a church? Were you born in a hospital? And any number of things that become easy. Oh, yeah, we did engage. Talking with Ken Yoder, who's the national commander for Salvation Army, we were talking at one point about engaging influencers and professional athletes and stars and telling their stories. And Ken told the story of three active members of the NBA who got their start as 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds playing basketball at Salvation Army gyms. Those stories need to be told. Not that everybody who plays basketball at a Salvation Army gym is going to make it to the NBA. But there are those interactions. There are those intersections. And to increase, and I would add to Carrie's question, think about how charities, the charitable sector, have benefited you. because they have, and appreciate that, respect it, be aware of it, contribute to it, expand on it. And I think that that awareness and intentionality will strengthen our society and make it even stronger, make the community connections even stronger, make the sense of, not just sense of, but the reality of belonging even stronger, which is good for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Thank you, Carrie. I have so appreciated this conversation and the time that you have taken to talk with me today. And I know that our listeners will appreciate it as well. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Carrie. Good to see you both.
Wonderful to be with you.
Thank you.